We've been going through the series on disease and what the Bible talks about on these various passages of diseases. There are all kinds of diseases mentioned, everything to get us and to bring us down. And mankind has been afflicted with various diseases from, I guess, time immemorial. And we're talking about that. And we're talking about it in the connection with aging, you know, because you're not going to age real well if you don't, if you have a lot of diseases in your way. You're just not going to do it. Speaking of aging, here's a quote from the scripture. Remember a guy by the name of Barzillai. Here it is in 2 Samuel chapter 19, verse 34. Barzillai answered the king, because the king wanted him to come to Jerusalem with him. And he says, how many more years will I live that I should go to Jerusalem with the king? I'm now 80 years old. Can I tell the difference between what is good and what is not? Can your servant taste what he eats and drinks? Can I still hear voices of men and women singers? Why should your servant be an added burden to the Lord my King? So the implication is, as we get older and older, we lose certain abilities. Taste buds don't taste as acutely. The one taste that doesn't seem to fade for older people is sweet taste. Older people still taste sweet just the same way they tasted when they were young. But other tastes have faded. And therefore, to enjoy your food as you get older, you may need stronger and stronger spices to perk up your tastes and to enjoy the food more. So, yes, here's a man that's aging. He says it. The Bible talks a lot about age. Old age is talked about. You know, Jacob was in Egypt for 17 years. When he got to be of the age, you know, he got to be 147 years old in Genesis chapter 47 and verse 28. 147 years old, Jacob. There's a passage in the book of Job, chapter 5 and verse 26. And the passage talks about, the Hebrew word here is an abundance of years, a ripe old age. In other words, a sturdy old age. A ripe old age. You're going to live to be, and we use that phrase even today, a ripe old age. Jeremiah in chapter 6 delineates two different kinds of ages, I guess. The old and the very old. Jeremiah 6 verse 11. Therefore I am full of the wrath of the Eternal. I am weary of holding it in. Pour it out upon the children of the street, upon the gatherings of young men, and also both husband and wife shall be taken. The old folk and the very aged. I'm reading that from the Revised Standard Version. The old people and the very old people. You know, they're old people, and they're very old people. It depends on how old you get to be as old, you know, and we acknowledge that. In the New Testament, the Bible talks about what we have to tell the older men, what we have to tell the older women. Titus chapter 2, verse 2, that the aged men, advanced. You know, the word here is presbytoi. The Presbyterian, you know, the presbyters, or the elders, the older people. And tell the older men to be sober, grave, temperate, sound in the faith and charity and patience. But then tell the older women that they have to behave as befits religious people, with no scandal mongering, no addiction to wine. They must be teachers of right behavior. I'm reading that from the New Jerusalem Bible. That's their translation. The Apostle Paul called himself Paul the Aged, Paul the Old Man, Philemon chapter 1, verse 9. And in the book of Luke, we find that when Elizabeth was pregnant with John the Baptist, she gave birth to John the Baptist, it says she conceived a son in her old age. That's Luke 1, verse 36. conceived a son in her old age. And then we have people who are what we call advanced in days. Advanced. Now, by the way, the Bible talks about days. You know, all the days of so-and-so were. All the days. How do you age? How do we age? One day at a time. One day at a time. The clock moves around. The next day, the next day, the next day. You know, there was a television series called The Days of Our Lives. You know, I think it's gone now. Days of Our... I never watched it, but I saw the advertisement. Days of Our Lives. I'm thinking, well, that's it. It's the days of our lives. Each day that goes through and the days of our lives. The in the book of Luke, chapter 2, verse 36, says, there was a prophetess. Her name was Anna, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, says the New American Standard Version. Advanced in years. That is, she was advanced in days. She lived a lot of days. We don't know how old she was, and she had lived with her husband 7 years after marriage. So she was married for only 7 years after, you know, she was a virgin, and then she lived with her husband for 7 years, and then after all that time, she was a widow. In the Bible, it talks about the blessings of great age. Old age is anticipated, sometimes with hope, sometimes with a little bit of a fear, you know. Listen to this statement, and this is Psalm 71, verse 9. This is the psalmist writing here. Do not reject me in my old age. I'm reading that from the New English Translation. Do not reject me in my old age. When my strength fails, do not abandon me. He's asking God. And if you drop down in Psalm 71, this is Psalm 71, dropping down to verse 18. Even when I am old and gray, O God, do not abandon me. Not until I tell the next generation about your strength and those coming after me about your power. You know, don't throw me away, God, just because I'm old. What do we do today? In a society today, you get old, what do they want to do? Throw you away, you know. And he's saying, you know, God, don't throw me away just because I'm old and I'm gray. I want to still tell people of your power. I want to still show people what you can do. Well, getting old is precarious. It's difficult. And therefore, we have this exhortation from the book of Ecclesiastes. I want to read Ecclesiastes chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. And I can remember my father saying something to me. I said, well, how's your garden, Dad? He said, well, I can't keep it up very well. It's got a lot of weeds in it now. He said, I just don't have the pep I used to have. He would refer to energy as pep. I don't have the pep I used to have. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, when the years come and you'll say, I have no delight in them. Before, now, all of this passage is filled with metaphorical language. Okay, so you have to kind of read in between the lines here what he's talking about. He's talking about getting older, getting old age, before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened. Why are they darkened? Well, you can't see very well. And the clouds return after the rain. You know, when rain usually comes, what comes after a big rain? What? Sunshine, nice weather, beautiful sky. But no, the clouds return after rain. You just had a big rain and you're finished and now there's more clouds. You don't see the bright sunshine. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim. And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And one will arise at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. You can't hear it so well. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms. The almond tree blossoms. You know, when the almond tree blossoms, it doesn't have many leaves on it. It blossoms before the leaves all come out. So the autumn leaf blossoms, they're all white. The blossoms are all white on an almond tree. And the rest of it is sticks. So it's, you just got this thin branch, and you got all these white blossoms. And you know what happens to us as we get older? What happens to our hair? It gets kind of white. The almond tree blossoms, but you get thin, you get frail. Yes, the almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper drags himself along. And the caperberry. Now, the King James says, and the desire goes. But the desire is no, but the Hebrew word literally means the caperberry is ineffective. What is the caperberry? Well, it was a little berry that supposedly created aphrodisiac. It gave a desire. It created a sexual desire. The caperberry is ineffective. There's a time, and as you get older and older, even aphrodisiacs don't seem to work. For man goes to his eternal home, while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. The pitcher by the well is shattered and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. Now, that vanity doesn't mean stuck up or anything like that. Vanity there means futility. It's just things happen. You know. Yeah, we age. There's an aging process. The aging process is not necessarily fun. However, you would be surprised at how many people around the world have lived to be 100 years old. Several years ago, they have taken a census and they found that there are approximately 300,000 people in the world who've lived to be 100. One woman lived to be 122. She's the longest actual known verified person. You know, I mean, the scholars don't think that you can verify the Bible that says 147 years old. But, you know, they say, well, where is his birth certificate? And where was, you know, all this, the hospital records? But the person that we could actually verify with hospital records, there was a woman in France that lived to be 122 years old. Here's what one man says. His name is Thomas Pearls. He's an MD, and he wrote the book called Living to 100, Lessons in Living to Your Maximum Potential at Any Age. Here's a quote from him. He says, average life expectancy should be 85, and it would be 85 if more people would take disease prevention seriously at a time when it is still possible to make an impact and maintain good health habits for a lifetime. Now, when someone dies, you don't say, because, well, they didn't take care of themselves always. Because some people have taken good care of themselves and they still get something that we don't know why things are working in our world. And I know a good friend of mine who also has a leukemia, but it's slow growing. He doesn't know how he got it. He usually takes good care of himself. He grows his own fruit and all that, and he's very careful about sprays and things like that, but he's got leukemia. Now, tell me why. I have no idea. I know people who have been very careful with their diet, and they have breast cancer. A woman that I knew, very careful, the doctor's wife, and she's, you know, knows nutrition, but she got breast cancer. I don't know why. I have no idea. But it doesn't excuse us to say, well, since we don't know, I don't care about taking care of myself. You got to take care of yourself. Okay? He says, unfortunately, the vast majority of baby boomers do a terrible job of preparing for old age. High-fat diets, smoking, excessive drinking, lack of exercise not only reduce people's chances of achieving older age, they markedly increase the likelihood of a longer period of poor health in a shorter life. Yet many of us probably have the genes to get to old age and perhaps extreme old age. We just have to learn how to use them. Another quote from a man by the name of Dan Buettner, and his name, he wrote the book Blue Zones. I'll tell you a little bit about Blue Zones in a minute, where it's a study of people who've lived 100 years old. You know, they go around and you find out all these people live to be 100, and they plot them on maps, plot them. You know, where are these people in the world? They go around the world, and anthropologists do that. He says this: if you live the average American lifestyle, you may never reach your potential maximum lifespan. You might even fall short by as much as a decade. But what if you could follow a simple program that could help you feel younger, lose weight, maximize your mental sharpness, and keep your body working as long as possible? While these practices are only associated with longevity and don't necessarily increase it, by adopting them, you'll be adopting healthy habits that should stack the deck in your favor. In other words, if you adopt healthy lifestyle practices, you know, they'll stack the deck in your favor. You can't always know when an accident will happen or when you're going to get something through chemical troubles, but you can stack the deck in your favor. This is a question that researchers ask. How do people 100 years old and older avoid these life-ending diseases for so long? To live to be 100, you got to avoid a lot of diseases. How do they do this? You know, there are all kinds of ways. Superstitions have abounded. There were ideas of in China for a long time that the way to get to be 100 and to live to be a long old is to drink gold powder. Powder up some gold and drink gold. That will help you. There were other ideas. You know, there were all kinds of ancient recipes for living a long life. Hippocrates, the ancient Greek physician called the father of modern medicine, over 3,000 years ago, he just said this. It was a very simple formula, and this is his formula: everything in moderation. Everything you do in moderation. Don't do too much of anything. A little of this, a little of that, a little of that. And he said, that's the way to live, that will lead to longevity. Now, they've carefully researched longevity, as I've mentioned. And the people who research it have come up with plotting all the people who've lived to be 100. They plot it all over the maps. And then one of the guys was there. He had a big blue pencil, and he drew a circle around the cluster of these, where all of these people live to be 100, most of them are. Where are most of these? Where are the vast majority of these people? And he comes up with, and that's why they named it Blue Zones, because he used a blue pen. They said, okay, that's a blue zone there, a blue zone here, only because of the way he used his pen. And here's the blue zones. Here they are. You want to know where the most people are live to be 100? Here they are. Okinawa. The southern part of that island south of Japan, the Okinawans, you know, there are a lot of people there. Sardinia, the little island off the coast of Italy, Sardinia, all, you know, 98% Italians there. They have quite a number of people who've lived to be 100. Costa Rica has a large number of people live to be 100. And Loma Linda, California, has a high concentration of people who've lived to be 100. What is it about these people? What is it about the Okinawans? Okinawans, by the way, have 1/5 of the heart disease that Americans do. 1/5. They live on the average Okinawan, not just the 100-year-old people, but the average Okinawan lives at least 7 years longer than the average American. Here are the characteristic lifestyle of the Okinawans. Here's what they do. Number one, They found that the Okinawans have a purpose in life and a reason to get up each day. Number two, they eat mostly plant-based diet with little meat that resembles, their diet resembles the typical Mediterranean diet. Number three, they grow their own gardens, including medicinal gardens with herbs, healthy herbs. That's what these are the 100-year-olds now. The ones in Okinawa live to be 100. Number four, they eat more soy. Number five, they maintain stress-shedding social network. And they stay in touch with young people. They like to talk to young people and keep in talk. They spend adequate time in sunlight to activate their vitamin D. They have a high intake of calcium in their diet. They stay active in things like walking and gardening. They have a high level of psycho-spiritual serenity. They have high optimism and low levels of depression and anxiety disorders. High optimism. Things are going to work out. Things are going to be good. And a low level of depression. Things are going to go downhill. It's all going to be bad. We're all going to, you know, they don't think that way. They have a strong but affable personality and attitude toward life, and they enjoy simple pleasures. Now, people in Sardinia have an atypical, there's some atypical characteristics about the Sardinians. First of all, most of the people in Sardinia who will reach 100 are mostly men. And that's contrary to the vast majority of centenarians around the world. Contrary to it. For the vast majority of centenarians are women, 9 to 1. Women make 100, 9 to 1. But here in Sardinia, that little island off the coast of Italy, the majority are men. And they are usually active. The Sardinians don't eat fish. They eat virtually no fish. Which is, again, atypical for people who live to be 100. How come they're living to be 100 and they don't eat any fish? And everybody says, you know, fish is good for you and all that. Okay, so here's what the Sardinians, here's their lifestyle. One, they eat lean, plant-based diet with small amount of red meat. They do eat red meat, but small amount. They have strong family connections and priorities with younger relatives closely involved with them. Three, they drink goat's milk. Four, they celebrate and respect their elders. Five, they walk several miles a day and working hard as farmers, shepherds most of their lives. They walk, walk, walk. Six, they drink a glass or two of wine daily. Seven, they have lots of positive feelings, respect and admiration for the elders of their society. In other words, they respect older people. And eight, they lots of laughing and humor in their frequent interactions with their friends. When they get together, it's lots of fun, lots of laughing. Of course, if you're drinking a couple of glasses of wine, you probably are laughing. Everything's funny, you know, a couple of glasses of wine. You ever notice that? A few glasses of wine and everything's funny. But anyhow, they laugh a lot, they have fun, they enjoy life. They go to Loma Linda, okay? They go over here to Loma Linda, and they see these people. What is Loma Linda to you? What do you think Loma Linda is? Why are these people living to be 100 in Loma Linda? Well, they're mostly Seventh-day Adventists, okay? And they outlive their fellow Californians by an average of 8 years and have a very high percentage of people who live to 100. And here's what they found out, their characteristics. They study these people. The first is they have a weekly stress-relieving break from life on the Sabbath to focus on family, camaraderie, and nature. They have a stress-relieving break from life. Two, they possess a high level of psycho-spiritual serenity. That is, they have faith. They believe that God's things are going to work out. So they don't, you know, worry. They have faith. They have trust. 3, they maintain low and healthy body weight. 4, they get regular, moderate exercise. I'm talking about the people who are the Seventh-day Adventists who live to be over 100. This is the study of those over 100 now. 5, they spend time with like-minded friends. 6, they snack on nuts. 7, they find purpose in life by volunteering and giving back to the community. 6, they follow mostly a vegetarian diet with low levels of meat consumption. 8. Number 9, they eat an early, light dinner. Number 10, they don't smoke and they don't drink alcohol. And number 11, they drink 5 or 6 glasses of water a day. That's the Seventh-day Adventists. And that's what they contribute. I mean, these are serious scientists now going over there, asking them what their lifestyle is. How, you know, you're 100 years old. Tell me about your lifestyle. What do you consider? And these are what they say. Now, they went down to Costa Rica, and here's what Costa Ricans do. They have a sense of purpose. Again, a sense of purpose. Life has purpose. Number 2, they want to contribute to the greater good of the community. Number 3, they drink water with high calcium and magnesium content. 4, they keep focus on the family. They consume fewer calories and eat lighter dinners. They consume a largely a vegetarian diet of corn, beans, garden vegetables, fruit, and some pork. Now, I know the people, well, how can they live to be 100 when they consume pork? Pork's supposed to kill you. It's supposed to kill you young, you know. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, now I don't eat pork. I don't like pork. I don't want pork, okay? I don't like shellfish. I don't eat unclean foods. But I think, and this is going to be controversial, some of you are not going to like me for this, but I think our emphasis on unclean foods has led us astray. And I'll tell you why. I think a lot of church members thought if they just eat beef instead of pork, if they just eat chicken instead of shrimp, if they just eat this instead of that, that's all they need to do while they drink their Coca-Cola, eat their candy bars, eat this garbage filled with coloring and preservatives, and they think, all I need to do is avoid the unclean meats and I'll be healthy. No. Wrong. That led a lot of people astray from watching the rest of their diet. They drink high fructose corn syrup in the junk food with the sodas. They eat foods laden with calories and saturated, overly saturated, hydrogenated fats. Most people would rather have a hydrogenated fat than eat something that had pork rind in it. And which one do you think is better for you? Do you think that pork meat has no vitamins and minerals? It does. Coca-Cola doesn't. Most white bread doesn't. Most Twinkies don't have much vitamins. But people would rather eat a Twinkie than to eat this so-called... Again, I'm not saying I eat unclean food. I don't want you to do that. We have wonderful clean foods that have one thing. But because you thought I'll have the Twinkie and not the pork, that you were better off. Well, you weren't. But this is what I think has seduced our people, got them away. They thought all the health food they need is just to avoid unclean meats. That's not enough. You got to avoid foodless foods, trashed foods, humanly perverted foods. That's what you've got to avoid. Yeah, so they ate some pork. Now, don't get all upset. How did they get to be 100 when they ate some pork? Number 7, they maintain social network with lots of laughing and talking. And number 8, they keep hard at work doing physical labor most of their lives, the Costa Ricans. So here are things people have in common. They found these 10 things. All of these, no matter where they are, they have pretty much these 10 things in common. Number one, they have low cholesterol. Number two, they have low blood pressure. Because they measure these, you know, they come up to the 100-year-old people. Can I talk to you? Can I measure you? Can I take your blood pressure, take blood sugar? They don't smoke. Number four, they have diets rich in fish, fruit, and vegetables for the most part. They have regular exercise. They have a healthy body weight. They avoid accidents. They have low alcohol intake. They take low-dose aspirin, and they take multivitamins. Those are what they have in common. They drink wine in moderation and so on and so on. They reduce their stress. They have a lot of studies, and they have found, you know, all these things. In some cases, higher education was beneficial to them. Eating a breakfast every day was beneficial, and that's one of the good things that people do who live to be 100 years old. Out of all of them, here are 16 steps. I'm going to bring out 16 different steps for you now. If you want to live, maybe you're not going to make it to 100. I don't know. My dad didn't make it to 100. I probably won't make it to 100, but that doesn't matter. I don't care if I make it to 100. I don't care if I make it, whatever God wants me to make it. I could get killed today. I won't make it tomorrow. You know, life has its ways. But if you want to live and live well and healthy, I think God bless our wonderful elderly lady that Eleanor Landing was here. She's 98 and two more years to be a centenarian, and that would be wonderful. Okay, a big celebration. Well, you know, burn the house down with candles. You know, I mean, heat this place up. But you see, most of these things she does. Okay, here's what we have to do. If you want to live to be 100, here we go. Number one, you have to maintain low blood sugar. More than half of the baby boomers will live past 84, but they will succumb to disease before reaching 100. Why? Because most of them are eating too much sugar, too much junk stuff. Fasting glucose level has to be below 100. If you have 100, if you fast and you go in and take your blood and you have 100 to 125 sugar count, you know, milliliters, you know, so much per milliliter, then that's called prediabetes. 100 to 125 is prediabetes. And prediabetes in the United States of America is found in how many people do you think are prediabetics in the United States of America that have a fasting glucose blood sugar of 100 or up between 100 and 125? 57 million people in this United States have a fasting glucose blood sugar level of 100 or more. Okay? That's prediabetes. Diabetes is diagnosed when it exceeds the range of 125. When you have a fasting glucose blood level of 125 or more than then you have diabetes. And that's not good. That's just not good. You want to be very careful with that blood sugar. Blood sugar damages so much. It damages arteries. There's a definite tie-in between blood sugar levels and heart problems. Definite tie-in between blood sugar levels and various other kinds of diseases. Definite tie-in. You must be careful with your blood sugar, keeping it low. And you have to, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of things now. You know, you have insulin, you have all these glucophages, you have the, but the best way is to, if you haven't had diabetes since when you were a kid and you developed it as an older person, you can control it mostly through diet and exercise. Diet and exercise. Exercise is a marvelous thing to do for your blood sugar. Second thing you've got to do is maintain low blood pressure. What is blood pressure? It's, you know, they measure it. You know, you put that little sleeve on your arm and they pump that up and they want to feel a pressure. And they measured blood pressure really is the force when the ventricles, you know, your heart has got four chambers. The two bottom chambers are called ventricles. And when they, you know, when they contract, boom, they send blood out through your aorta artery and down through these arteries. They measure the force of that, force of the blood pushing against the walls of the arteries. That's what is measured. And it's a result of two different things. The blood pressure, they get two different things. One is called the systolic. The systolic, that's the higher number. That's usually the number on top. Like a normal blood pressure would be 120 over 80. So the systolic pressure is the 120. The systolic blood pressure is generated when the heart's lower chambers contract and push that blood then through the arteries. That's what... The diastolic, which is the bottom number, is the blood pressure that is created by the artery's resistance to the blood flow going through them, okay? So you press to that first one, then the arteries kind of collapse down on that. I mean, you're expanding that artery, and then that artery comes back to push the blood back, closing those valves in your heart back down to some degree. You're shoving it through this hose. The hose expands. Then the hose pushes back. That's that diastolic pressure. You want to keep those low. Diastolic blood pressure then is created by the artery's resistance to the blood flow between the heartbeats. Sodium, too much sodium, too much salt, creates what is called hypertension. And then hypertension comes from stress. You get a lot of stress. You cannot feel hypertension. This is the trouble with hypertension. People think, oh, I can feel. No, you generally can't feel it. Your blood pressure goes up and up and up because you're tense. Your muscles are tense. You're under stress, too much stress, and it's rising. And a lot of people don't even know it. I knew a man that was under so much pressure, he went in to get his blood pressure tested, and he had no idea. He was starting to have a little bit of headaches, but he had 240 over 220. His doctor said, you're like a bomb ready to explode. Because his heart was pushing that hard, the tension in his body, the tension. You have to learn to relax. So good normal blood pressure is less than, if you want really good, you know, good quality blood pressure, it's less than 120 over 80. That's good normal. Hypertension will be when it's 139 over 89. They'll say, well, you're getting a little tense here. Okay, that's then there's what is called an isolated hypertension. It's called isolated systolic hypertension. That's when your first number is real high, but your bottom number is rather in the normal. For instance, let's say you had 145 over 82 or 84, you know? And why is your first number so high? It's called isolated systolic hypertension, and that is predictable of heart problems. If you get that first number too high, that could also be a very bad sign. So be careful with that, okay? Stage 1 hypertension is 140 over 90 to 159 over 99. That's stage 1. That's not the worst stage. The worst stage is 160 over 100 or higher. So when you go over 160 over 100 or higher, that is too high a blood pressure. Now, I have my good friend said to me, he was under a lot of stress in his department where he worked, and he was just under stress, and he went to his doctor, and the doctor said, Ben, you got high blood pressure. And his friend, his doctor said, I'll give you two choices. One, I can give you a medication that will bring your blood pressure down, or two, you can exercise. Which one do you want? He said, well, I'll exercise. So he bought his own blood pressure instrument, and he began to walk and jog, and he worked up to where he was jogging 4 miles about three or four times a week, jogging 4 miles. And you know what? Blood pressure came down. Relaxing, he built it up, and the heart developed more. And by the way, when you exercise, the body builds more blood vessels. The body builds blood vessels. I can tell you this, if Kobe Bryant were here, or one of the great stars of basketball, as they do, and you were to take a slice of his skin, a square inch of his skin and a square inch of my skin, you'll see he has far more little capillaries in the top of his skin than I have in mine. He has far more blood vessels. And his heart has far more blood vessels. Not only does he have the same heart artery around the heart. You know, the heart has its own artery. You know that, right? The heart has its own artery. So it not only has, the heart not only has to feed all the rest of the body, it's got to feed itself. It's got to, you know, pump heart, blood around itself. But his heart will have all kinds of other blood vessels around it. So that even if he had a clogged artery, he probably wouldn't notice it because he's got all this peripheral circulation all around. And that's why exercise is important. You get all those extra blood vessels around in your heart and in your body so that it lowers your blood pressure. You have more blood vessels carrying heart, you know, your heart blood everywhere, so it lowers blood pressure. So that's what my friend did, and now his blood pressure is normal. So again, does exercise benefit you? You bet. What are one of the things that all the centenarians had in common? Walking, exercising, staying active, having purpose. They're absolutely very important, and do not neglect it, because your body is not made. This body that we have is not made to sit still for vast hours and times. It's made to be active. Now, I know we live in a sedentary world. I know that we do. We all live in this sedentary world where we don't do much. But believe me, that's not the way your body was constructed. God made this body to move, and you're better off with it moving and working. And we have not yet found a way that this body can do well just motionless, sitting, doing nothing. And you know what happened to the astronauts? You remember we found this out. What happens when you go into space? The first astronauts, what happened to them? They had major cardiovascular degeneration in just a couple of days in space because there's no gravity. It's like being in bed. Like being in bed 2 or 3 days at a time. And even worse than being in bed, because when you're in bed, you know, when you turn over, you have to give some work to the gravity. There's absolutely no effort to do anything when you're in space because there's no gravity pull. Your arm can float up like that with the least little push. Your arm can float because it won't fall down. You know, your arms can be up like that. You got to bring it down. And so your muscle movements require almost no calories, almost no effort. And therefore, their heart went into a major degeneration. Their cardiovascular system and their arteries and their veins just began to shrivel and go down. And they had major problems when they came back. So now, guess what they have to do when they're in space? We send a resistance machine. They have to spend so much time pedaling and pushing and doing something with that has springs to it so that your feet have to do something so that you get exercise. So if you're in space and you don't exercise, you'll have a major cardiovascular degeneration. We now found that. We have to have it. Humans are earthbound. We need to be walking, moving, and doing things that keep our bodies in motion. We'll talk more about some of the things you can do next time we speak.